From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As voters flock to the polls in the U.S. to select a president Tuesday, an election held earlier in the week in the Americas may stand as a better example to other countries in the hemisphere. For more on that, we spoke with Tony Solo, live from Nicaragua, Tuesday morning. We're grappling with the U.S. presidential election here, to the horror of most of the world. But you guys down there in Nicaragua just went through an election also for president. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, and it may seem a kind of silly thing to say, but I think that this election in Nicaragua is a really decisive election in Latin American terms. And also in global terms, I mean, if you take a global perspective. And the reason I think that is because although Nicaragua is a tiny country with only 6 million people, 6 million plus people, and so its electorate is kind of something around 4 million people. And if you look at what has been going on in Nicaragua over the last 10 years, it's been a kind of battle between the elite neoliberal ideology that the elites somehow magically endow national economies with wealth. And the argument of the socialist grassroots here in Nicaragua and people and across Latin America and Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, you name it, that wealth is created by ordinary people at grassroots, and that wealth is then extracted and appropriated by the elites. And that seems to me to be the fundamental argument in North America, Western Europe, and indeed the rest of the world. You know, how is a country's political power to be distributed? Is it to be distributed in favor of the tiny elites, you know, the kind of 5-10% of any country that dominates the capitalist economy? Or is it going to be distributed in favor of the 70-80% of the population that actually produce wealth from a socialist point of view? And here in Nicaragua, that argument has been decisively won by the socialist point of view. And because in Sunday's election, 72.5% of the electorate voted for a socialist candidate, and from a left-wing point of view, one may not like the variety of left-wing that Daniel Ortega represents, but he definitely represents a socialist alternative. There's no argument about that. And he won with 72.5% of the vote.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's not noted here in the U.S. where people discuss what is and what isn't socialist is the vector between what they tolerate here and what they tolerate in countries that have a socialist perspective or among, advocates of policies of a socialist perspective. Here, you know, yeah, we hate unfettered capitalism and we rail against it. We haven't really done much about it, but we rail against it on a regular basis. There, where you're building socialism and you're involving the local bourgeoisie as allies against the international bourgeoisie and imperialism, not allowed. You're not supposed to do that.
All right. Well, I know. It's not very communicative in a way to start talking about economics. But if you look at the economics of it, and in Nicaragua, 70% of the population produce, depending on what measure you use, if you use an income measure, they produce 60% of the wealth. If you use a production measure, they produce something like 52% of the wealth of the country, depending on, and so what does that mean? And that means that The vast majority of people, and that's reflected in the vote. And it's just I just find it fascinating that 72.5% of the population voted for the Frente Sandinista in this election. And that reflects kind of pretty faithfully the economic fact that 70% of the population produced Nicaragua's wealth. Now, in the United States and in Western Europe, in Canada and on all the NATO countries, between 1% and 10% of the population extract that wealth for their own benefit. Right. But here in Nicaragua and in other countries like Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, and under the progressive governments of Lula da Silva and Dilma Rousseff in Brazil and the progressive governments of Cristina Kirchner and her predecessor, Nestor Kirchner, her husband in Argentina. And in other, in the region, there is a progressive political bloc that has designed economic policies that faithfully represent the economic, in political terms, the economic distribution of wealth production in Latin America. And that political distribution is that the majority of people in Latin America produce the wealth that is then extracted in right-wing, under right-wing regimes, by a much smaller percentage of the population. So it's a fundamental class struggle, if you like. But then in Nicaragua, and the other thing that's very interesting in Nicaragua is that Nicaragua is a world leader in gender terms. Because under this election, all candidates had to be, all parties had to submit a list of candidates, 50% women and 50% men. And that makes Nicaragua leapfrog over the rest of the world to gender equality in their political representation. And imagine that in the United States or Western Europe, for example.
Right.
Nicaragua has made Western Europe and the United States look pathetic in terms of their gender representation. Nicaragua has made Western Europe and the United States look pathetic and unjust in terms of their economic representation under their electoral processes. And that is why, if you look at the international press coverage and media coverage of the Nicaraguan election, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, El País, Le Monde, Die Welt in Germany, they're all rubbishing the Nicaraguan election result. Why are they rubbishing it? Because, of course, it makes the elite-dominated systems, the anti-democratic system of Western Europe and North America, look pathetic.
You know, and on that point, it's very curious. You point out that 70% of the Nicaraguan population are the producers, that number. Remarkably, or perhaps not so remarkably, logically following, the support for the government for Daniel Ortega is around 70%.
Well, yeah.
So it's interesting to look at, say, the vectors in the vote there, the division that exists in the electorate in Brazil and Argentina, which is more, 48-48 with a little shifting margin. And particularly in the United States, where you actually see evidence of an uprising over the vector because of the long-standing impoverization of the middle class and the working class here, you have now half the Democratic Party at least stood up behind Bernie Sanders over that issue, and almost the entire Republican constituency, regardless of all their little ideological foibles, stood up over the same issue there. So, and you have people in the streets over this issue, too, in the United States. A majority that's railing against the vector between we're the producers and this is our share of the pie. And in Nicaragua, you have it reflected in the political system. The actual producers are voiced almost to a person in the electoral outcome.
Yeah, and of course, that's why you get... And if you look at the arguments in the NATO country media, in the leading corporate media, and also in many cases in the alternative media, the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. And if you look at the arguments that are being presented, what are the arguments? You get Carlos Fernando Chamorro writing in the New York Times. Carlos Fernando Chamorro represents the Sandinista renewal movement here in Nicaragua. And it's very well established here in Nicaragua among reputable polling companies that fraction of political opinion in Nicaragua represents 0.2% of the electorate. So why is the United States, why isn't the New York Times, why are the Washington Post projecting internationally the opinion of 0.2% of electoral support in Nicaragua, as represented by Carlos Fernando Chamorro? I mean, they're projecting that opinion because it suits their imperialist agenda.
Right. They are the 0.whatever percent. That's their constituency. I mean, their coverage of almost every issue everywhere else reflects exactly that.
Yeah. And so in the same way in the Guardian, and which is the liberal outlet in the United Kingdom, and liberals in the United Kingdom like to think well of themselves because they read the Guardian. And so in the Guardian, and if you read the articles in the Guardian, it's very, very clear that their staff writer, Gioconda Belli is a staff writer for The Guardian, and she is an internationally known novelist, you know? Well, just like Sergio Ramirez. Sergio Ramirez is an internationally known novelist. And they're very good writers. There's no denying that they're very good writers.
Fiction.
But their political opinions represent, just like Carlos Fernando Chamorro, 0.2% of the Nicaraguan population.
I think it has to do with the fact that they're very facile with fiction. That's why they're writing for the
Well,
party.
Yeah, I'm they're novelists, right?
Right.
And so, and they project their fiction beyond their own kind of economic, socioeconomic activity. They project their fiction beyond their socioeconomic activity into the wider political arena. And so what you have is this political fiction that's projected by the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Guardian and Die Welt and all these international media, this political fiction that somehow, in some magical way, 0.2% of opinion in Nicaragua is really representative of the political wishes and the socioeconomic wishes of the great majority of the Nicaraguan population, against the fact that in an actual election, in a real election, in based on the socioeconomic facts and the political facts of life in Nicaragua, 72.5% of the population support Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo and the Sandinista Front for National Liberation. But what the NATO media do is they take 0.2%, and it's beyond stupid. It's absolutely insane that the international media elaborate this postmodernist construct that somehow 0.2% of Nicaragua's population actually override the factual vote of 72.5% of Nicaragua's population. I mean, it's just insane.
Yep. Well,
and you see that reflected across, and you can see that in it reflected in the vote today in the United States.
Yeah, for sure. And also U.S. policy towards other countries. For example, whenever we hear about a politician in Russia
that's favored by the United States. When you go back to, and they talk about them being a big threat to Putin, the guy that got killed last year, for example, or earlier this year, this is someone who's a legitimate, opposition character that Putin is frightened of, and so he dies, and the others are suppressed. These are people that if they started a bus tour in Petersburg, for example, and drove the bus to Vladivostok, they couldn't fill it with supporters if they were collecting them from one end of Russia to the far end of Asian Russia. And yet those are the people that we see and hear from that supposedly truly reflect Russians' opinion.
Yeah. And so I think that's true. And here in Nicaragua and in Latin America, even in Central America, and let's take Central America. If you look at Central America, what is the focus of the Western media in Central America? The focus of the Western media in Central America is the supposedly undemocratic nature of Daniel Ortega and his Sandinista government here in Nicaragua. But if you compare what happens in Nicaragua is the safest country in Central America. Nicaragua is the country that has done most to combat organized crime and drugs trafficking in Central America. And if you look at what's happening in Honduras, and if you look at what's happening in Guatemala, there's absolutely no comparison between the progress of the great majority in terms of their security, never mind their economic well-being, just in terms of their security, whether they're killed or not. No, and that is absolutely fundamental. Nicaragua is a beacon of security in Central America.
Yeah, I look at Mexico, by the way. You could throw Mexico in there too, United States. The cities in the United States.
Yeah, I've forgotten what the level of homicides per 100,000 is in Nicaragua, but it compares. It's almost on a par, if not better than Costa Rica, and it's better than any other country in Central America. Of course, Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala are terribly dangerous countries for ordinary people. And it was very interesting for me because we had a visitor on Sunday from El Salvador, who was observing we managed to get him a press pass from the electoral council here in Nicaragua, and he was able to be monitoring. In fact, we also got some press passes for a couple of people from the United States so that they could be inside the voting centers looking at how the voting proceeded all day Sunday. And they all said, and this particular guy from El Salvador said, he compared what was happening here in Nicaragua, complete calm, a complete absence of violent conflict, a complete absence of some kind of adversarial campaigning. He compared that with El Salvador, where many tens of thousands of people in the capital, San Salvador, have had to leave their barrios because of organized crime, in particular the organized crime of the so-called Maras. But when they come to vote, they can't vote because the places where they have to go to vote, where they're registered to vote, are controlled by organized crime, by violent organized crime.
Nice.
And that's not just true in San Salvador. That's true in Honduras. That's true in Guatemala. And so but if you look at those countries, what is the propaganda of the U.S. State Department? The propaganda of the U.S. State Department is that by means of the Alliance for Progress, they call it, with Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, the U.S. propaganda is that they are somehow helping those countries towards democracy and freedom. But where is the democracy and freedom? It's in Nicaragua. It's not in El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, or even Mexico.
Right. Yeah,
and Mexico is even worse. Mexico is completely sunk in corruption, in organized crime, the control of organized crime. No, and the propaganda emanating from the U.S. state, and for me, this election in Nicaragua is a watershed, because it means that it's clear for everyone to see, who's willing to see, who's willing to abandon the ridiculous propaganda of the Washington Post and the New York Times and all their allied media, that a socialist program of the kind developed in Nicaragua, even in the hostile global environment dominated by global capitalism, enables the great majority of the population to live a decent, secure, prosperous life. And that message is the message that Western media are desperately trying to suppress.
Yeah. You also have a political system where that can be reflected. And again, I'm looking at the vector among the, between the voting population in, say, Nicaragua, where you have an almost 100% positive correlation with class and expression of the class interests in the vote, and places like Brazil and Argentina, and even Venezuela to a degree, and certainly in the United States. What are the institutional structures that allow this to happen in Nicaragua that don't exist in these other places? Or alternatively, what are the institutional structures that exist in these other places that operate against that class interest being expressed at the ballot box?
Well, very clearly, the institutional structures in the United States and Western Europe, for example, are heavily structured against any kind of democratic representation, especially in regards to the youth. And if you look at Nicaragua, people in Nicaragua vote in Nicaragua from the age of 16. Okay? So in Nicaragua, the vote is overwhelmingly a youth vote, and its great majority is a vote by youth for somebody who's 70 years old. Okay, what does that mean? That means that young people recognize the benefits of a socialist system. The benefits of a system that's oriented to redistributing wealth, and making sure that the 70% who produce their wealth get that wealth redistributed in their favor at a government level. And that is what doesn't happen in Western Europe and North America. And if you look at we've already won this argument, hands down. There's no point even rehearsing it again. And the more important thing is that this vote in Nicaragua represents a rallying call for, certainly in Latin America and the Caribbean, a focus on the needs of youth, on the needs of women. And so the resources are devoted to a truly democratic expression of the social and economic needs of the population, and not this kind of fake 1 to 10% reflection of what that 1 to 10% deem necessary for the overall society of Western Europe and North America. And one of the interesting things, and if you look at when the New York Times and all these and Washington Post and The Guardian and Die Welt and El País, when they talk about Western democracy, if you look at Latin America and the Caribbean, they have had all these interests, all these corporate elite interests, have had a perfect opportunity to express what their kind of democracy means in Latin America and the Caribbean. And they have had that expression, that they have had that opportunity in the country of Haiti. Now, if you look at Haiti, that is the perfect expression of elite Western democracy in the Western Hemisphere.
Yep. Haiti and Puerto Rico.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe we could take a look at this election in the context of the alleged conservative restoration, or the rollback of the red, pink tide, or however they characterize it in Western media. What does it mean as far as that goes?
Well, and that conservative restoration was always nonsense, because the fundamental premise of that idea is that generally people in Latin America and the Caribbean recognize that right-wing alternatives are better than left-wing alternatives, which is complete nonsense. And in Brazil, the only reason the conservative restoration was possible was as a complete perversion of the constitution. In Argentina, the conservative restoration was brought about by a complete misrepresentation by Mauricio Macri of what he intended to do. He talked about zero poverty. Completely shameless hypocrisy and cynicism.
Right.
He talked about zero poverty in Argentina, and within the first 6 months of his government, inflation is at over 40%. 200,000 people have been from the public sector have been thrown into unemployment,
right.
and the private sector is in crisis. That's what the conservative restoration meant in Argentina. And we'll see similar effects in Brazil. But the fundamental effect is that, and the conservative restoration was supposedly to promote democratic freedoms. But if you look at what's happening in Brazil, and this usurper President Temer is sending the army and the police in with live ammunition to attack legitimate non-governmental organizations like the Movimiento Sin Fronteras. And in Argentina, you see similar actions, and the archetypal representation of the conservative representation came out today in the media, where the Argentinian government is trying to deny the level of repression under the dictatorship in Argentina of the military dictatorship. They're trying to say it didn't happen.
Right. People there remember, however. And you know,
yeah.
You have on
How
the ground.
How inconvenient,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
The people remember.
people still notice those that are missing because they were disappeared, too. Those people are still disappeared. You have alternatively on the ground in Nicaragua essentially the eradication of extreme poverty and the severe mitigation of poverty generally, and that also happening within the memories and the lifetimes of many of the people who vote.
Well, sure, and that's why the youth vote here in Nicaragua is so overwhelmingly in favor of the Frente. Because even young people, even people 16 years old who are entitled to vote in this year's election, they remember what things were like 10 years ago.
Right.
Okay? And it's not difficult. And in 2006, Nicaragua was sunk in complete economic, socioeconomic immiseration. 10 years later, it's one of the most prosperous and secure, and certainly the most secure countries in Central America.
And that is its biggest offense in the eyes of the West, and we got to stop there. Tony, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thanks, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.